Hi, podcast friends. Would you like to help All the Answers become very, very deeply, deeply, profoundly popular? You can do two very simple things for us today to make us incredibly fancy in the eyes of the world. Would you go to where you listen to us and just click on 5 stars? Give us a 5-star review, and you're going to make us very, very popular. Apparently, people who can support our podcast by giving us ads and such can't do so or won't do so until they see that we have like 50 bazillion 5-star reviews. So go to your local place that you're listening to our podcast and give us 5 stars. You don't even have to write words with your brain and hands. You just click the 5 stars. How easy is that? Also, check out patreon.com and search All the Answers podcast. And there you can donate funds in small chunks that then will make you famous on the podcast. We have 3 different tiers of support. You can either get a shout out on the podcast regularly. You can come on the podcast. You can ask a question that where you won't have to be on the podcast, but your question gets answered on live air on the podcast, or various other gifts that we will give you for donating to us and helping us keep bringing you fantastic, sassy, irreverent, spiritually aware content. We love you. Patreon.com, All the Answers podcast. And please give us that 5-star review today. It'll take you 36 seconds. We love you. Hello, friends of the podcast. How are you doing? How's it going for you? I hope all is well and shiny and bright and deeply surrendered and aligned and in flow. Just a small request and desire I have for your soul. Hey, listen, if you're interested in getting some really deep activation, spiritual healing and alignment for yourself, getting clarity on your own spiritual path, and or clearing or healing anything you need cleared or healed from your body, being, soul, or spirit, join me for 3 days of star being and Christ-light healing, October 1, 2, and 3, in upstate Massachusetts, or you can join online. It's a 3-day retreat where we're gonna zap a ton of crap right on out of your system and align you with the light in a really powerful way. October 1, 2, and 3. For details, give me a little email and I will email you back with everything you need. KLRubin, R-U-B-I-N, at gmail.com. That's K as in kiss, L as in love, R-U-B-I-N, at gmail.com. Additionally, consider joining us for 2 weeks in Egypt, November 15th to the 26th. 2 weeks in Egypt, friends. We're gonna go to the temples, we're gonna go to the pyramids, we're gonna go to the Sphinx, and we're gonna be raising the vibrational field of the planet to lift the weight of the recent trauma that we've all been going through for the past year or two, from the planet itself, from the collective, and from our own hearts. So this will be a ton of healing, and also like rad travels on the Nile, and an integration time for 2 days at a beach at the end in Egypt. Have you always wanted to go to Egypt? Well, you should go. Now's the time. Email me, klrubin at gmail.com. That's K as in kiss, L as in love, R-U-B-I-N, at gmail.com. And for now, enjoy the cast of Pod.
Welcome to that spiritual, actual, factual answers to questions you're asking. You find them inside you, beside you, reciting the records of cash. We laughing, we drafting, the passion through fabric. It's time for that comedy, dramedy, all of the fanciest, catchiest acronyms. Listen, we traveling. Consciousness always unraveling. The reading you're having is mapping you back to your natural habitat. Abracadabra, it's magicless, basking it. To top it off, the host are the classiest. Now, what were you asking for? All of the answers, what? All the answers.
So, for the listeners, I did get the cock-sucking, motherfucking, shit-bearing vaccine yesterday. Yay!
That's how doggy feels about.
Okay, hold on. Someone's at my door and I have no pants on. Oh my God. So, because everybody in the world's experience that I talked to was that day two of their vaccine day was this, you're sick and you can't do anything and it's terrible and it's day two, at least the Johnson & Johnson people, which is the one I got. I planned this whole day around
I'm going to be all fucked up. I'm going to be in bed. I need the dog walker to come. And I never do that. I take Squeeze out 5 times a day, you know, like,
yeah.
So I plan for her to come at 3. And then we threw this together at the last minute because I wasn't sick today because my weird body got, okay, I'm going to tell you the crazy form or shape that my reaction to the vaccine took, because I think we should, I'm also like, I want to hear more people's stories about like, what was it like in your body? Like, I'm very.
Yeah.
Yeah. So short version is I got the thing. It was far away. It was like an hour away. My friend drove me. She drove me back. I cried while they were giving it to me a lot, mostly because of fear and pain. Like, it hurt my arm.
Yeah, it hurts. That jab is not friendly. And it's not a friendly jab.
It wasn't friendly. But then get this miracle. There was a guy there. I'm all panicked. And I'm like, we're just doing it. I'm breathing. Paramedic was standing in line. He was like staring at me. And I was like, I said something to him like, are you going to stare at me the whole time? Because I feel really uncomfortable. And he was like, oh, no, I'm just a paramedic. And if you faint, because I was talking about I might faint to the lady with the needle.
Uh-huh.
I just want to be here for you. And I started sobbing out of gratitude. I was like, you're the nicest man. And I'm sorry. And I... So he and I talked through the whole thing. He was the coolest. We have the same point of view about the whole vaccine thing. He was like my twin.
Mm-hmm.
And he was standing there in line for me when I needed him.
Yeah.
It was miraculous.
That's awesome.
My friend held my hand. That was great. The dog was with me. That was great. I sobbed a lot. I had the whole team.
You had all the support.
A lot of crying. Then I was fine. Then we got in the car. And then an hour later, all of a sudden, I went white as a sheet. And I felt like... I think I told you this already, but I just, for the listeners.
So this is after you get home. You get home, get your friend home, leaves, you're okay, and then suddenly.
My friend leaves. Well, as I'm getting out of her car, I was like, ooh, weird shit's going on. I walk down the hall to my apartment. I'm like, ooh, I'm about to start sobbing. So I get inside. I take the pants off, because as we've learned, can't be restricted. I felt like liquid clay that was mixed with metal was moving down my arms, up my spine, into the back of my head, down my belly, down my legs. I could feel it, whatever that is, that vaccine, whatever the fuck it was.
Yeah.
Dissipating into my whole system. I cried for an hour straight. That's when you got that lovely message from me where I was like, I'm really freaked out and I'm having an hour. And I blew my nose the whole time, which I say because by the end of it, I had so much snot relieved itself from my face. Like, I found myself crying about my mother, and I was crying about my dear girlfriend, who she and I trigger each other a lot, and I love her a lot. All this stuff about her came out. It was like a big spiritual, emotional process where it wasn't just, it was kind of like, this is how I understand it. The fear that got triggered in me was this foreign invader is in my body and I'm out of control and I'm real scared on like a nervous system level. So everything in my life that has had fear on it is gonna process out right now.
Yeah.
Amazing. After that hour, I felt light as a feather, no symptoms, perfectly great. Until, and that was like, I don't know, 5 o'clock. Cut to 11 p.m. Terrible nightmarish chills and fever that hit me like a ton of bricks in a 1 minute period of time. All of a sudden, chills, fever, so cold. So I get in the bath and I take a bath and I'm like, oh, the water hurts my skin. Like this, my body was, did you have that?
Yeah.
Okay.
I don't mean to say like, oh yeah, that's it. No, but yeah, I totally did.
Okay. See that?
Yeah. I want to acknowledge that everything you're describing is a version of what I experienced, but,
ugh.
But yeah, it, I you're can't not wait to unusual.
Hear.
Yeah.
I cannot wait to hear. So super sensitive on the skin, super like emotional, super chills, super heat, fever. Okay. Then it's so bad that I'm moaning. I'm going like, the pain in all my muscles in the whole body was so bad. And I started to lose my vision and then I had to shit real bad. But I couldn't get off the floor. I'm in the bathroom with my head on the ground and my ass in the air. And Squeezle is now like, it's, you know, 11 o'clock and she's licking my face going,
oh,
trying to help me.
Yeah.
Which is, ugh, I feel awful. And then I'm like, I got to get this shit out of my body or I'm going to puke or something bad's going to happen. But I couldn't lift my head to get to the toilet. So I get to the toilet finally. I take a shit. I'm sorry, listener. That's just what happened. And I'm telling you 30 seconds.
It's not an episode if we don't talk about poop at least once.
Fair enough. 30 seconds later, fever gone, chills gone, dead asleep. Slept till 2 in the morning from 2 to 4, wide awake, could have written a novel, run a marathon.
Yeah.
And then slept from 4 to 8. And now I just kind of have a headache and feel tired.
Yeah.
So sort of like.
That sounds about right.
There were two bouts of like intense time.
Yeah.
Like an hour and then 12 minutes that were awful. And the rest is just not.
They just feel a little scrunky.
So I'm sort of imagining that my two intense moments were like stretched out over time for people over 2 days.
Somewhat. I mean, I feel like mine came in waves too. I can't remember the timing of it, whether it was immediate or that night. I think it felt like it was like 12 hours later. So it wasn't like the next day, but it was the evening of the same day. I mean, I just recently had the shingles, my second shingles vaccine, which is similar. They do it once and then you do it again. And my first one was fine. And then my second one, I had pretty intense, like, but it was more just like body without any like nausea, but not puking, like, you know, not like lowered gut, but not diarrhea. Body felt weird, but didn't actually have it was doing all the things without actual, like, without the sickness version of it. You know
without
what I mean?
Any product coming out of
your holes. Product. I wasn't producing at all. But it's the same, like, I mean, the sort of super unscientific theory for me of what you've described and what I feel, and then talking about your parents and your mom and like that and like sadness. It's like, because what it's doing is it's like kickstarting the process of whatever, it's just ramping up all the systems in your body. And you especially, Katie, like, you are someone I have witnessed multiple times. Like, you know, you take a Tylenol PM and it makes you insane for 12 hours. Like, you lose touch with reality and you pass out. And I'm not saying that to mock. It's actually what happens.
No,
like,
it's real.
A Tylenol PM. Like, that's supposed to make you a little sleepy. But when Katie takes a Tylenol PM, it is like, blackout, freak
out, pass
out.
Let us tell the story correctly. I took 4 and you're supposed to take 1.
Yeah, well, there's a mistake made.
I thought I was taking...
Maybe if I took 4 Tylenol PM, I'd have the same psychotic break. Like, very possible.
Listen to me. That was a whole... Have we told that story on here?
I don't know. Okay, go ahead. You tell the story real quick about what happened.
So you had... That was when you did the shingles, is you had all the things without the product.
And when I did the second shot of Pfizer... Katie's taking off her pants, everybody.
No, this Katie's, is my bra.
Oh, Katie's bra. Taking her bra off down her pant legs. Never seen that. That's cool. Just unleash, release. But when I take the Pfizer, I mean, everything you've described is something that other people, almost everybody I've talked to, experience in some form or another.
Okay.
I think yours were like super intense, super fast.
Yeah. Yeah.
But in terms of like, some people needed to poop. Some people needed to just shake on the floor. I definitely needed to shake on the floor.
Really?
Big time. Yeah. Just like it also happened with the shingles where like there was one period at like 3 a.m. where all I wanted to do was just get on the floor, even in my own bedroom. Like I couldn't be up in my bed. I just needed to be farther down from
the height
that I was at. And I just needed to like bundle up and like in the corner. And I actually, that was comforting. Like to just fall on the floor in a fetal position.
That's exactly what
I was able to fall back asleep for a little while.
That's what I did. Why is that helpful? Is it grounding? Grounding?
It might. So that's when we talk about the sort of the mix between like our connection to our physical bodies and our connection to our emotional bodies and our spiritual bodies. And there's no separation. They're all one fucking thing.
No, exactly.
Yeah.
Well, okay. So, all right. Now, thank you for telling me that. And I, you know, my friend Kat was saying, like, I was describing all these things and she's like, you know, I just want to say, not to minimize your experience, but like everyone who's taken this thing has gone through what you're describing, maybe a little less intensely, maybe in a way that doesn't trigger all their trauma. But just know that because you're not here. That's because I was asking her, can you tell me reasons I'm sure not going to die? And I think I said that to you, too.
Yeah. I was like, everybody has felt this.
Yeah. So that was helpful. And I just, it's so intense for me that I, like, it's not, I don't know. Maybe I even wonder that, like, maybe my intensity level at which I experience everything is exactly the same as other people. And I'm just like a child about it. Like, I just don't tolerate it well. Or maybe it's higher. And I don't know.
Yeah. And you're also more prone to attaching your feeling your feelings about what your body is feeling. You don't shy away from feeling your feelings.
I don't know how to not.
Exactly. It's like, that's who you are.
I wish I could, though. But I wish I could.
So your body feels like a feeling and you immediately go to panic or.
But I can't compartmentalize it. Like I know how to in my mind, how to compartmentalize things, but I physically can't do it.
No, you don't need to.
All right. Then lastly, we're going to tell this story before Rami comes on.
Okay.
Cassidy and I did a play many moons ago, and the play was called... Which play was that, Cass? Were you in this play? You were.
That one was when you did the Tylenol. That was the North Plan.
Oh, the North Plan. Okay, so we're doing the North Plan at Capitol Stage. Poor, poor Stephanie Goulart. Long story long, I had slipped and fallen in a previous performance and hurt my back, maybe?
Knee.
Okay, that sounds right.
Or hip. Like hip or knee.
My hip. I think it was the hip.
Yeah.
Anyway, so before the following night's performance, we were all going to have dinner before the show. And I went real quick to a deli in Sacramento and I picked up what I thought was ibuprofen to help my hip feel better so I could just do the show. And I thought it hurts enough that I should take 4 ibuprofen instead of 2, which is how much. Well, cut to, I don't know, 40 minutes later, and I'm in a restaurant with Cassidy and a bunch of other people around this table. And all of a sudden, I start to hallucinate and I start to see, I'm like seeing through time and space. My hands go numb as they're wont to do. I'm starting to feel really weak. And I'm like, I got to get down on the ground. And I'm aware that our call time is in like 10 minutes. We have to be there in 10 minutes to put the costumes on.
Right, we're just across the street at this restaurant. And then Katie turns to me and says, and like kind of grips my arm. And kind of privately, but also like just like in urgently says, first kind of has a little panic. Oh, fuck. Oh, fuck. Oh, fuck. And then you go into your bag.
That's right.
And you pull out the box and you look at it and you kind of go, oh, no. Like, what have I done? And then I don't know if you show me, but you kind of like get my attention. And me and the stage manager are at the dinner and both he and I go, okay. And we just like tell everybody else, y'all have to pay, deal with it. We're taking Katie back across the street to the theater. We literally support you.
I remember you kind of helped me walk across the street.
Like fireman's carry, practically. Like, you've got your arm over both of us and you're like a drunk lady, like legs akimbo.
Back up real quick. It turns out it was not Tylenol PM, something PM.
Yeah, but it was...
That you're, and on the back of the thing, it said, take 1 for a full grown adult. And I had taken 4. And I am sensitive and knew that it was, if I took 4, it was going to be bad. Long story long, they carry me across the street. I collapse on the floor of the dressing room. I cannot stand up. I remember trying to, I was like on my side looking at the floor being like, I'm going to get it together. We're going to do this. It's going to be okay. Meanwhile, I hear the people, the audience filing in and they're paying and they're, oh, welcome. We're so excited to see this. She can't wait. Is it Katie Rubin in this one? Oh, we're so excited. And I'm going, I like heard that sentence and I'm on my side. I was so fucking upset and fucked up about the whole thing. Can't lift my head. Matt keeps coming in and being like our stage manager, like, so honey, we have to get you into your costume. Do you think you can? And I'm going, I can do it. I can do it. At some point, Stephanie Goulart arrives, artistic director of the theater. Someone who, let's just say, doesn't suffer fools and doesn't have time for BS, right? She's like a handle it kind of lady.
Yeah.
Shows up and I'm terrified because Stephanie's there and I'm like, I'm fucking destroying this night of theater and it's my fault. And what are they going to like refund everybody's money? And what? So she's standing over me. I can't get up. I can't lift my head. She's standing there. And she says, she walks in, stands there. There's 2 feet right next to my face. And she goes, yeah, you're not doing this show. She decides it in 20 seconds, like immediately decides. And I'm relieved. But then I instantly start sobbing because of the guilt. I feel terrible. Matt goes to work calling my friend Chris, who's going to come pick me up and drive me home because I cannot. Not only can I not drive, but I can't stand upright. Stephanie puts on my costume, which is a size 8 or 10. She's a size 0. They pin it up the back with like big, thick, black, like paper clip pins, those big black.
Yeah.
It's for paper, so she could keep the costume on. She goes on with script in hand and does the fucking play.
Yep. And she and I just kind of wing it the whole show. She gets lost a couple of times, and like they've got a person in the audience who helps her find her way back into the script. And the audience is all there for it because they're experiencing a thing that never happened before. But meanwhile, Katie is being carried to a car and ensconced.
So I get taken to someone else's car. He takes me home, and this is the end of my version of the story. He puts me in the bed of the actor housing I was living in, and I laid there and hallucinated all night long, didn't sleep a wink. He stayed with me for a little while, and then he was like, I'm gonna go because you're just tripping and I need to sleep. He goes home, and I just hallucinated and watched the pretty dancing bears and shit in my head until 6 a.m. when I passed out. I was out to tripping.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, you're there trying to like, I have to know one thing. I think I've asked you this before, but I can't remember your answer. In the last scene where there's all the shooting that we had choreographed, there was so much choreography.
She like, memorized that scene.
The you text?
Yeah. There's only a few lines in that very last two guns come back in. She carried this. Yeah, go ahead.
But when to shoot, she had to shoot this and then that and then this, and the squibs were rigged and it was like timing.
Yeah, I don't know. We just kind of made it work.
Oh,
I think
God.
She just communicated with the, you know, they went off of her or whatever, and we just kind of winged
when
it.
Cassidy,
I mean, there was nothing dangerous about it because it was, there was no contact, but.
Yeah, for non-theater people, when he says they went off of her, he means like the light and sound people took the cue of when to make the blood pack explode and make the sound go bang off of Stephanie pulling a trigger, as opposed to some other way we may have rehearsed it, where it was supposed to be like,
right,
you know, the sound cue, then I turn, then bang, and I'm following the sound or whatever. They had to like take their cues off of her because she didn't know the fucking play because it wasn't.
No.
Oh my God.
It was awesome.
You're anyway, a fucking champ, is what you are.
I'll tell you what, that was a situation where, and then we'll bring Rami in.
Yeah.
Because they're waiting. But that was a situation where, like you said, this is an intimidating person, a person who we were all a little respectfully afraid of. Like, I respect the hell out of Stephanie. She is a beast of the best kind, but also a little intense.
Yeah.
And like, but she was, once she got past the like, okay, Katie, leave. I'm doing show. I don't want to see. And she was also kind of like, okay, now I'm going to go do the show and I don't want to see Katie from this moment on. That
well,
was
yeah.
a weird, because she didn't want to be distracted by dealing with you.
Yeah.
Once she decided to do the show, she was like, you handle her and I will do the show.
Yeah.
But then she was very nervous and scared about doing this entire very text heavy show. And she was looking to me the whole time and was like a and needing my support. So that was a really exciting moment for me to just be like, oh, look at this fellow human being who actually needs my support.
Oh,
and I'm no longer scared
nice.
Of you because I'm the one with, quote, the power. Power is the wrong word, but I'm like in the space of, you know, having something to offer this person. So that was cool.
Wow. Theater stories.
Theater stories.
Ladies and gentlemen, Rami motherfucking Margron.
All right, here we go. Letting Rami in. Oh, look at that picture.
I stare at it.
So cool.
Every week. So
Rami,
badass.
Rami, are you there?
Oh my God, why are you yelling?
You're probably in the background somewhere. Sorry.
So much yelling.
I'll message them and let them know that.
Yeah.
Rami
yeah,
is muted.
Hi.
Okay. Hey. Oh.
And given notebooks. What's up?
Hey!
All right, now I feel like I have to do that. Okay, that's better. Because it's just too unattractive. This, look at this. The light's off. I look like I just had a vaccine and I've been in no pants for 2 days, which I have. But then you put the lights on. Not
Whoa.
So horrifying. Less horrifying.
No.
You look very well lit, Rami.
It's the sun. It's daylight.
Oh, what's that?
It's really dark in this room, but I'm like right in front of the window. It's all you need, apparently.
I love it.
Yeah.
For the listener and for Cassidy, although I'm sure you guys have talked about this already, but Rami and I were chit-chatting about something about the podcast. And Rami said, at some point, I'd love to have a chit-chat convo in a casual, because I'm not an expert on this topic, way about the relationship or the potential relationship or the dynamic between the Akashic Records and the like spirituality through the African diaspora lens.
Ah.
And then I was like, please come on the podcast and do that. And then Rami was like, I am not an expert. Someone else should do that. And then I was like, but if we say to the people, Rami is not an expert. And we are formally saying there are people who know more things on this topic than Rami. And Rami knows a fuck ton more than I know on this topic. So I thought, let's just have a chit chat about it. And I'm very excited to, for very many reasons that I want to articulate. But before I do that, thank you for being here.
I mean, Rami is friend of the podcast. So friend of the podcast, Rami Margaron. Ever we need a substitute co-host, I think Rami will probably be it.
That's a good call.
Whoa.
Like, you know, I'm in a show and you need a co-host for the week. Boom. I've just decided that.
What an interesting thought.
How do you feel, Rami?
God, I feel wonderful about that. I can't tell you how satisfying it is in my own personal way to have you say three times in a row that I am not an expert on the upcoming topic. That just like relieves so much pressure. I can't even tell you.
Oh, I'm so glad. Well, yeah, whatever works. We want people
I wanted to say that before every conversation.
I know nothing about which I speak. Now,
I want to say something about that because I love this because I've been doing a lot of work with Surge, showing up for racial justice, which is an organization that organizes white people in the path towards racial justice, blah, blah, blah. It's a cool org. But we do this thing called Action Hour. And one of the things we say at the top, because one of the sort of aspects of white supremacy is the need to be the expert.
Woo!
Oh, boy. Mm-hmm.
And like, I'm the expert, you know. And so we have people come on this Action Hour. We're going to take actions. We're going to do a thing. And so many people like, well, I can't do that because I don't know enough about it. So they don't say this, but we get ahead of that by saying we are not the experts, nor are you the experts. We are asking you to take a leap of faith and trust that the people for whom these issues affect more deeply, primarily organizations led by people of color who are more the experts than we are, have asked us to take these actions.
Mm.
That is all to say, I get so much feedback from people saying like, thank you for saying that.
Mm.
Oh my God. That takes the pressure off to have to be the expert. We can still talk about things without being the experts.
Yeah, if only I could relate to this, having named my podcast All the Answers.
You're fucked, Katie.
If only I knew what white supremacy was. If only I had a little taste of it. Oh my God, that's so funny. That's really good. And you know what's funny about this to me from my mystical woo-woo realm is that lately, I think I've probably talked on here a bunch about how the numbers show up for me. Like I'll see the number one obsessively for days in a row and then I read about it and it's like, yep. And I've had this for about 3 or 4 years now where the numbers every day, all day. And I've talked to you, Rami, about this. I think you had voice memos and stuff.
Yeah. Yeah.
The 8 lately is showing up. And of course, I'm an 8 on the Enneagram, and that was my first hit. But then I was like, no, this is something else because I was getting just different energy on it. So I was reading about the 8. The 8 energy in this particular way that I look at it is about leading with doing a kind of leadership that's about I am learning as well while I am teaching. So even if I'm in a position of teaching or leading of any kind, I'm being shown repeatedly now that the way forward, for me anyway, is dropping all trappings of all the answersness, of having all the answers and going like, well, let's ask, or going, where is that for you? Like, or going, here's what I get. How does that land? All of this withness, you know, and it's been a way that I believed in for a long time and I've been trying for, but there's like a next levelness of it that just as both of you are articulating is giving me so much permission in my healing work to just fully take the pressure off of, I mean, I was already practicing that, but it's like next leveling that where I'm going, I'm in the mystery of reality too. And let's ask the divine. In my case, that's what we do in this session, right? Or I'm in the mystery and I have a sense of this, and my sense of it from my channeling is going to be affected by what you say in response to my channeling. In other words, I shouldn't even be the authority of you, no matter whether I could fucking channel or not. You know why? Because what I'm channeling is always influenced by what is your emotional truth? What is your truth? You, whoever is. And they're interconnected. It's all one energy field. So it would be super arrogant of me to be like, I mean, and this is my main beef with my whole field, that I sometimes am like, I should get out of this entire industry, is because I don't believe in people who disempower other people to pay them more money to do more, so because I have all the answers. I should be empowering you to find your answers. And if I channel something, it should be helping push you toward a thing you kind of already knew or didn't know, but now that you know it, it helps you have more of you, not that it helps you follow me. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Yeah.
Anyway, so it's very on topic with what you guys are saying.
Well, not to mention that, like, I mean, I know that what you're channeling is not necessarily English human style.
Always. Yeah.
Communication, right? So like, there is this, I mean, like,
translation.
Yeah. And you have to filter that also through your knowledge, Katie Rubin's knowledge so far as learned as of this moment this year. And like when you were talking about, they were showing you coronavirus, but that hadn't happened yet. And so you didn't have a context for like, that must be so interesting.
Yeah. I was just going to bring that exact example up and say that, like, when they showed me the five things about why I was leaving California, the one was this nebulous, foggy, cloudy, sicky feeling. And I was like, what the fuck does that mean? So I just gave up after asking 90 questions, like, because I can usually, when I don't know what an energy is, be like, all right, let's ask. Is it this? Is it this? Is it this? Is it that? And nothing. So because global pandemic was not on my fucking radar, to your point. So yeah, it was only later that I could see what that was. So all of this is a lovely segue to, oh gosh, there's so many things I want to say about this, but I want to keep it simple. To our conversation today, which is, I want to know as much as I can know about other cultural practices and traditions and how they relate to and connect with the beyond, the other dimensions, God, whatever.
Yeah.
A, because I need to be able to, I need that context. I don't have it. And I need to be able to refer to it. I need to know what it is so that if I'm having people of color in my classes, which, hello, let's hope that's freaking happening more, and it matters and is relevant, I need to know personally. Secondly, like, it's very interesting to me that I don't know any of it. Like, how am I 44 and a liberal who went through like a really good education system and like am a deep spiritualist? I haven't come across any of this shit. I know one thing. I know what the word ashe means. That's all I got.
That's a good one.
Thank you. Okay. So given that you're not an expert, could you share?
Absolutely. Yeah. Let me think about where I'm even going to start. So, okay. I have questions about African diaspora religion as it relates to the Akashic Record. So what I'm referring to is a bunch of different religions based in West African religions that have come to the New World. So Cuba, Haiti, Brazil, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, including the Southern United States. And to some degree, I love, and it's been a subject of study for me in my life, I love learning about the similarities between the country, the various cultures of the African diaspora, including the United States, the ways they're similar, the ways they're different. It's really amazing how African people still possess certain common experiences despite everything that's occurred, you know, due to colonization, et cetera, et cetera, slavery, blah, 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 and time, right? So the religions that I have a relationship to, although I'm not initiated into them, include Haitian Vodou. And then, like, I'm around a lot of my dearest friends for the last 30 years have been practitioners in Yoruba-based religion. So sometimes it's called Santeria or Ifa, Candomblé. There's a bunch of different African diaspora spiritual traditions that have a lot of similarities. So I'm going to talk about those, or I have questions about those.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I just wanted to like preface that a little.
Yeah. Context. Super useful. Yeah. Context. Yeah, yeah, yeah. I can say one thing already.
Okay, great.
Which is uninformed and fully intuitive.
Great.
Egypt. Okay. The first understood transmission of the Akashic records happened in the king's chamber or near it in Egypt, like one of the pyramids. Mm-hmm. Is where the first time that was a thing, whatever. So then what is the relationship between Egypt and Africa historically, culturally, in terms of, I'm wondering, in terms of religion?
Gotcha.
And they're not so, and so far.
West Africa. I'm talking about West Africa specifically. It's a big, big ass
big
continent.
Big ass continent. Right? Yeah, for sure.
And Egypt is in Africa.
Right. And so is Egypt on the eastern side? Where is it geographically?
Well, it's northern.
Northern.
And I'm not looking at a map right now.
You're not an expert, neither am I.
Egypt is northeastern.
Yeah. And it's so funny that you mentioned that, because like the first time I heard of the Akashic records or the Akashic anything was from an Anne Rice novel.
That's fantastic. So all I'm saying about that is that there's a connection of some kind already, just by the mm-hmm. fact that this thing we're calling the Akashic records, its first reported location or transmission point was Egyptian, which is in Africa.
Yes. So yeah, so I don't, and the thing about the Anne Rice novel is it took place in Egypt. I forgot to mention that because it was like the queen, original vampire, whatever. Okay, done with that. So all I know, so I don't know, it's funny, there is somebody who practices Kemetic spirituality living in the house with Cassidy. So she could actually talk all about that. But I know that they're both polytheistic religions. So that there is a pantheon. And you know what? I'm just going to say it. So is Catholicism. Boom, I said it.
Yeah, fuck yeah.
And so even polytheistic religions often have like a overarching sort of godhead of some kind, but there are just so many ancestors and other spirits that you are working with, like in Catholicism. Mm-hmm. So I know that in Egypt, that is also the case, as it is in West Africa. They have different names, and I mean, I know that in both cases, you're gonna be dealing with all the main principles of life, right? So spirits who are representing all the parts of life, right? This ancestor represents, you know, harvesting, and this one, the crossroads, and this one, blah, blah, blah. So I imagine that there's a lot of overlap in that way.
Well, there's obviously an overlap with the Hindu tradition. They have a lot of gods or deities that are of different, like harvest and this and that. But that's not, that piece, it doesn't cross into all the, does it?
Gotcha.
I mean, I think maybe this is more about, let me put this way. Here's what I was thinking about is when you were saying that, I'm thinking about, so in the, I guess we could call it the New Age movement, which I sort of hate that umbrella term because it's so easy to write off. But anyway, there's the idea of like divine light and then ascended masters. So like Buddha, Jesus, Mother Mary, they would be considered ascended masters, which really just means they lived on earth as human mammals. And then they like transcended the form of the body and became enlightened, which meant they didn't have to be in a body anymore. And now they can be useful conduits between the divine and us because, as you say, they are associated with a specific set of energies. So I don't know. So for example, like Green Tara, Kuan Yin tends to be like compassion and mercy. Mm-hmm. Whereas the divine light has all the qualities, justice, mercy, wrath, truth, you know, all compassion. But if you need compassion only right now, you go to Kuan Yin because she's got just that. But there aren't deities of the harvest or the this or the that anymore, which is really interesting to look at. Because you're right, in like the Hindu tradition, you've got Ganesha who does this, and you've got Kali who does that. Yeah.
I feel like I should talk a little bit about just my experience in African diaspora religions, and then interrupt me whenever. Like, I feel like I should just start saying a few things, and maybe they'll help us.
Yeah.
This conversation is really big.
It is. I think I want to know your central question at some point. Like, I want to know your question. Like, yeah, I'm excited about it.
Yeah.
If there is one.
Right. So it is like very much ancestor based, this religion, and the different spirits are also ancestors.
Okay.
They're just maybe elevated a little bit further, or they're ones that everyone has a relationship with, as opposed to maybe just your personal ones or whatever. So each practitioner has like so they're often called Orisha. So in Vodou, they're called Loa, but in other religions, they're called Orisha. I'm going to use that term right now, the spirit, different spirits. Everyone has like an Orisha who is their personal, who has their head, who is their personal, like their saint.
Like a guide, like a spirit guide, or like something else?
Yeah, a guide. It's someone, so it's an Orisha that you have a strong relationship with. Maybe you embody some of their qualities, or that Orisha just for whatever reason decided that you were going to be their child. They wanted you. And you usually have two. You have like your main one and your secondary one. And if you are, yeah, so if you're initiated into the religion, then, you go further in the religion, you have a lot of like, you have just a really active relationship with those Orishas. And you might have a relationship with all the Orishas too, but especially those, and they might ask some things from you.
Okay. So you're not choosing them ever. They're choosing you, or they're just there.
They choose you.
Okay. I like that, actually.
So there's also a lot of altered state stuff that happens in ceremonies, not even always in ceremonies. Like, I've caught the spirit so many times not in ceremonies, like performing or in rehearsal or, you know, just like, anyway, there's in the practice of African diaspora religion, there's...
And what does that mean, catch the spirit?
So it's an altered state. So in Haitian Vodou, they refer to the human as the horse and the loa, which is like an Orisha in the name of the Orisha in Haiti, as the rider of the horse, the horseman.
Hmm.
So if you've heard there's a movie called The Divine Horseman, that's what that's referring to. So it's like the human is being energetically ridden by the spirit.
Interesting.
And when that happens, the human takes on just is essentially a body with the spirit doing like controlling them.
Yeah.
So, you know, and then people bring them what they want, you know, like if, you know, bring them the things they like, the foods they like, the clothing, the colors, you know, and like wait on them essentially, because it's an honor for the spirit to come through.
When you say catch the spirit, do you mean, I'm assuming I can feel the vibe of it. So I'm going to say what I feel about it. So you tell me if this is correct. Like, it's like somehow the action you're taking on the earth plane opens a space in you or a portal or something that allows you to then be connected with the spirit in a more intimate way that they might be sitting there all the time, but you might not be as connected or activated by them directly as you are when you get yourself in that certain state that opens you to receive them. Is that right?
Yeah. And you get to that state through ritual, through repetition of sound and movement and like all the things, all the ways that the various religions of the world, you know, get to altered states in ceremonies, right? And so when I'm in an event where like an Orisha or a Loa is visiting, they will, you know, they might, that human might speak a language they don't normally speak, or might have physical powers they don't usually have. And they have often had advice for me, the way that you, Katie, have advice for me when you are opening the records.
Fair enough.
Also, when I've gotten readings from priests in Vodou or in Yoruba-based religions, they have given me the same advice. They have come to the same conclusions that you have, but they are using, you know, whichever methods they're using of divining to come to those conclusions. And so that is when I'm like, bing, bing, bing. It's so interesting that you all are, you're getting the same information.
Yeah, that's really cool.
Yeah.
That's really, really cool. That's what I was sort of like wondering, if the central question around what you're interested in here is to do with that at all or not.
Yeah. So I don't know what my question is right now.
Okay.
I know what I've been told about myself and which Orishas and Loa I'm connected to. Like, and I wonder if I was in the records, would that mean anything to,
yes,
you know, like what, and what would that language be? You know,
I could tell you for me how it would go. Like if you were to say, so we're in the records and you go like, can I talk to Jenny Smith, my Orisha?
That is the name of Rami's yes, primary Jenny Orisha, Smith. Jenny Smith.
I love it.
Let's make it like the whitest name ever.
Karen.
What's like Karen Johnson?
No, I have to say about the name Karen that the vast majority of Karens that I know in my life are dope black women.
Yes,
so
true.
Oh, that's so funny.
That was funny.
I know a
when
few
people
of
talk
them.
About a Karen, I'm like, huh.
So, okay. So if you were to say like, could you tell, what's the name of one? So I don't want to make up names.
Okay. Ogun is the name of one.
O-G-U-N?
Yeah, that is one way to spell it. O-G-U-N is a way to spell that. It's funny, when I said it, I was imagining O-G-O-U because it was in Benin in West Africa where I was told that.
Hmm.
But in Haiti, and then like Cuba, it'd be more likely your spelling. Go. You're
interesting.
Good. Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
So Ogu, mm-hmm. like if you were to ask me, can we talk to him, it?
Mm-hmm.
Yes would be the answer. Only because I haven't yet met an energy from the other side that doesn't communicate when you yeah. ask it to communicate. So, mm-hmm. I mean, if I can talk to, I channeled once, what's his name? Sam Kinison. Why couldn't I channel like a spirit being or an entity or a consciousness of a hallowed traditional practice who's much more in the realms of the Akasha? See, to me, the realms of the Akasha, according to, there's all this weird shit about that word and about what the records are and what they mean. Some people say it's a Sanskrit word and some people say it's an Egyptian word that means realm of God. And so to me, if I always have this image of the whole God paradigm as being layers of light. And I always see it as like at the center of all time and space, there's this is just for the sake of having words and images, but it's small enough for our brains to understand. I'm going to say these words and images. Okay. So like, if you imagine like a tunnel of golden light that exists at the center of all creation, and it's really dense and bright, and so bright that if you look at it, you'll just be eviscerated and explode into bits of nothing. It's like 50 million suns. Okay. And that whole column of light is made of that. And then out from that is emanating out further left and right, up and down in every direction, is more and more 3D, you could say, or denser bodies. So planets and objects and couches and people and entities, and it's all emanating at different distances, you could say, even though distance isn't the right word, from the center. Okay. So it's all like a couch is living in a much more 3D reality than, say, Ogun is. Okay. But we could talk to both of them because they both have consciousness. They both vibrate at a frequency. And from what I find is that from the frequency of the source, that central golden column, which I call the Akasha, I call it a lot of shit. Akasha is just an easy way to talk about it. Anyway, from there, if one has connection to there, one can see anything that emanates from there because the there-ness of there is the eyes that see. In other words, think of it like if I'm in the ocean and you ask me, what is that drop of water like?
Damn it, language.
Well, let's say I am the ocean. I'm the ocean and I look over. I know. I'm the ocean and I look over at a portion of myself called that drop there. You know, it's not so hard to be like, well, yeah, I know what that drop is because I am that thing. I am that drop. That drop is an expression of me. So I see my job, my Katie 3D body job, is like going into that space of being the ocean enough that I can communicate from its perspective what these other aspects of itself have to say.
Can I ask about the couch? I know this sounds trite and dismissive, but it's not at all, actually. Would what the couch has to say be more boring and more like, just a couch? I mean, does it have a point of view that is as dynamic as Ogun?
Hmm. Well, I get a yes as you ask that, which is interesting. Let me just listen for a second, because I'm not sure that the couch would care so much about what you do with your life. but it might have complex points of view about its life or about like people that sit on it.
Right. About the nature of molecular existence or something.
Yeah, that reads.
I'm so glad that you asked about the couch.
I also am like, now I'm curious, like we should at some point open the records for a couch and just.
Yeah, let's talk to a couch and a mic stand someday.
A mic stand.
Right? I mean,
what is your function?
Okay, in the training, they say anything with a consciousness or an address has a records. And I think I have a broad definition of consciousness. So like, I'm like, shh.
And address. Like this has a location.
Or I don't know.
Is that
or
an address?
A birth time. Yeah, I don't know if the chair. The chair has a birth time.
That just shut me down. I have nothing more to say.
So yeah, it'd be fun to look into that a little more closely and see what they have to say or what the awarenesses that emerge from those places might be. Anyway, I'd love to talk with Ogun from that realm or to see if we could or see whatever. I think for me, just so far, there hasn't been so far, and I'm who knows what tomorrow brings, but haven't run into anyone or anything yet that we couldn't perceive. Now, one thing I will say is sometimes when I perceive a being or an entity or a space and time or a dead grandfather, sometimes they have like words to say, and sometimes they just are away. Like a lot of times I'll just be like, wow, there's this energy of brown leather and he's smoking and it's tired all the time. And boy, is he cynical. And they're like, he's here. And I'm just describing the experience of some energy that's here. And they're not. And then he's like, the person will say to me, what does he want me to know? And I'll be like, nothing. He's just being here. And then other times they have things to say. Anyway, so
Well, I remember in a previous episode, you talked about ascended masters earlier today. And you're like, they were humans who lived on Earth and transcended it and have a little more zoomed out perspective with a little more. But also some people just die and are then just, they're still ancestors, but they might not be particularly enlightened. So you can talk to them and they'll just be like, God, hey, how's it going? The death does not. Becoming an ancestor does not automatically grant you deep spiritual wisdom.
Like people always are like, what does my grandmother want to teach me? And I'm like, why don't we first ask God if it's useful for you to listen to your grandmother? Because your grandmother's just some fucking lady. I mean, she might be wise, but her death doesn't necessarily make her wiser. Although, if they're speaking to us from the other side, they can often see things we can't see. It just doesn't mean that they've evolved personally to a place where you want to take their advice about what they see. But you can also perceive that. So you can ask like I'll just kind of vibe into a person and be like, I describe them first and then go, so do you want information from this person? If they're cynical and resistant and judgmental, what was it you wanted to ask? And we can ask him and he'll tell his opinion. He's just some clown. Anyway, but so it is an interesting point on the topic of the word ancestor. I always have thought about this. There's a lot to say there too, because I'm coming from a notably white, non-African diaspora context when I even use the word ancestor. So it was fun for me to hear you say more about that when you say that. I think what you said was all spirits, Orisha, are ancestors. Is that right?
Yes. Yeah.
And does that mean a person that was in a form, a 3D body, and then died?
I don't know.
The word ancestor.
I mean, those are also ancestors, but I can't say. And like Jesus is an ancestor, you know?
I don't know, because I don't know what that word means in your context.
Well, yes. Okay. So yes. So anyone who's in a 3D body who dies does become an ancestor. And if they are an ascended master, then, you know, they're an ancestor that you want to listen to. Right. So
like an ancestor with benefits.
Right. So Jesus and Buddha are definitely ancestors. Now, the Orishas, they are also considered ancestors, but in this elevated way, you know, that is, and maybe somebody else can speak better on this, but were they real people that ever existed? I can't say.
Interesting. So I think this kind of speaks to, like, I would like to learn about what folks mean by that word. In that context, I want to know what ancestor means, because I think I really don't know what that word means in that culture.
Yeah. Okay. So, but in general, it does mean someone who existed in a 3D body, but has passed away.
Okay.
But yeah, that is like a super interesting question about like the Orishas. Like they're just Yeah, I could say some things, but I feel like that is one of the I'm not an expert directions I don't feel like treading in completely.
Well, could you say what your theory is, and then while acknowledging that you don't know what you're saying, would you be open to that?
Okay. If you think about like Catholicism, right?
Yeah.
The saints are like the Orishas.
Okay.
I don't know that much. I know more about African diaspora religions than I know about Catholicism, but in my understanding,
I think you're right. Yeah.
Yeah, that this
go ahead.
The saints are like Orishas. They are ancestors from a very, very long time ago, although some not as long ago, right? The idea is that Orishas are ancestors so that perhaps they did have human form, but it was a very, very long time ago. Like so long ago that it's the stuff of legends, you know?
Okay.
And that they're so elevated at this point that, you know, it's been so long since they've been a human that it's not really about that for them.
Okay.
However, occasionally new Orishas pop up, like new, there's like a very fine line, like, because, okay.
It's hard to try to articulate the ineffable, isn't it?
It is. So, and also a thing about African diasporic religions is that they are yes and religions. They are inclusive religions. And that is a thing about polytheism in general, is that if you all of a sudden become aware of another ancestor or another, you know, who has been elevated to the point of Orisha, you're like, cool, come on. Here's another one. You know, when Jesus, you know, like when colonization happened and Africans were told by Europeans that they had to be Christian, you know, and here are a bunch of icons and stuff, they were like, okay, great. These guys too, Jesus too. You know, there's no, when you don't have the limitations of monotheism or the, like the fear around that, then there's no problem.
That's good. I love that. I feel that way. That's why I'm like, sure, we could talk to Ogun, because it's all one energy. It's just like some other guy. Why not?
Yeah.
I love that.
But Cass.
No, yeah, that's what I was going to ask. What did he look up?
I literally typed the question, was Ogun ever a human being? And it took me to just the Ogun thing on Wikipedia. It's Wikipedia, so big, huge star, asterisk, grains of salt, just covered in salt. Ogun, and it says in his earthly life, Ogun is said to be the first king of life. When some of his subjects failed to show respect, Ogun killed them and ultimately himself with his own sword. He disappeared into the earth at a place called Ire Ekti with the promise to help those who call on his name. So, like Rami said, a long time ago in the stuff of legends, in the time of lost in the mists of time, there was an earthly aspect to at least this particular ancestor slash Loa slash
Orisha.
Orisha, thank you.
So what qualities we associate with that one?
Okay. So he's a warrior. He's not the only warrior, but his energy is more of a daddy energy, like more.
So he's into like leather and chains and stuff.
He's not like an egotistical show-offy warrior. He is a grounded warrior who chooses peace first and who has like a loving, yeah, he's a, I'm sorry, I got distracted by the birds that are coming to my feet or at my window. He has this sort of grounded, loving father quality about his warriorness.
He's like Braveheart guy,
yeah, yeah.
But not as crazy.
Never saw it, I'm afraid to say.
He's like the guy you want around when you're like, well, we got to go to war and nobody wants to, but they're killing us. So we have to survive. And
yeah,
we want some daddy wisdom mixed in with our bloodshed.
Yeah. Yeah.
Don't we squeezle? We were talking about, speaking of Orisha, Squeezle the Dog, big Orisha in my world.
Yeah.
The reason there was a dog walker today was because I thought, since this is day two of my vaccine and everybody I know had a terrible day two, I wound up having a terrible day one. I had planned this whole day around like not taping a podcast, not doing anything, not teaching, canceled all the clients. And I did feel like ass in the morning. And then I had a dog walker come because I'm like, this animal has so much energy. She's going to be going crazy by 3:00. And then the day just became a whole different thing. And so then we're taping and it's like, somebody's coming to take the dog and then bring the dog back. But, you know, to that point, that's just a fun anecdote. But additionally to that, I actually sincerely, like lately, I've really been sitting with the question, and I need to look in the records about this, is because I had my psychic healer teacher lady that I like a lot say to me, you understand Squeezle is an angel in a dog body. Like that is a high level dog. That's not just a dog. There's an angel who said, all right, I'll do dog form one more time. Fine. And like, this is an angel. And she's like, not all dogs are. And I'm not just saying that because I like you. This is an angel dog. And I'm like, okay. I mean, I think of her as that, you know, when I look in her eyes, she's very wise. And I'm like, she's an angel. I get it. So when I go like, if this is an angel in a dog body, like what she also told me before I get to my question, she floats ideas to you a lot. You'll think you're coming up with an idea. And I've started to notice the quality of idea that comes to me that's coming from Squeezle.
What?
I know, because I asked for a long time. I'd be like, is that from Squeezle? Is that from Squeezle? Like I'm asking when I get a new idea and I'm starting to get a sense of, oh, when it feels like that, that's from the Squaz. But the thing about it is that when she floats ideas to me, they're coming from the angelic realm because she's a fucking angel in a dog body. So she has access to the angelic realm, like really direct access to that place. Anyway, so then I go, is that, could we call her, like, does that definition work, the definition of Orisha? Or maybe it wouldn't work because she's in a form. She's in a body. And what about angels? Are there angels in the African diasporic religions? Or is that a whole not, just not a thing?
Okay, so Squeezle's not an Orisha.
Damn it. Damn it.
But she could have a relate, like she could be channeling, but like, well, I mean.
She could be ridden by one.
Totally. I think so. I mean, I think probably angels, sure. There's everything. There's nothing that there isn't.
Okay.
Because like I said, it's yes and. Like.
Okay. It's inclusive.
Sure. And there's so many different versions of African diaspora religions, some which incorporate Christianity more than others too. You know, like I was in West Africa. I was in Benin a couple before the pandemic, and which is where Haitian Vodou originates. It comes from that region, from the Dahomey people. And it was so cool. So Vodou is the national religion. And I've been to Haiti a few times. I'm half Haitian for anyone who doesn't know that. And I've also spent a lot of time in the Haitian dance and music community, which is not separate from the religion. It can't be. It is totally integrated into dance, music, and religion and daily life and just living are all
married.
Yeah, they're not separate.
Wow.
So anyway, you know, I'm familiar with Haiti and Haitian culture and Haitian folks. Like going to Benin was so beautiful because I had never experienced Vodou without the baggage of colonization before, without the mm-hmm. baggage of slavery. Now, it's not free from the baggage of slavery because obviously West Africa also totally connected to the slave trade and, you know, the results of the slave trade. But still, it is on land that is not, the land itself doesn't have the same relationship to colonization and slavery. And the religion was freer in certain ways. It was, God, there, it was just, it didn't have a, there's a way that shame, I don't totally feel comfortable saying this around folks who aren't in the community, especially to two dear white people who are my dear friends here. But, you know, there is shame woven because of colonization and slavery. It is woven into Haitian Vodou. And so experiencing that baggage not present was so beautiful and so just, ugh.
Yeah, I fully get it. And I can feel it when you talk about it. As soon as you start talking about being there, this is part of my weird thing is like, as soon as I start to, if I just connect with you and your connection to it, to mm-hmm. that place, mm-hmm. I go, oh, I know exactly what you mean. Because I could feel it. It's liberated from, even just when you were talking about how it's wedded together with life and dancing and music, like that's something we could fucking learn from in this culture.
Oh, yeah.
In the white culture. It's like, so when did it get so separate? Why is everything separated? And it's because of, I think because of the, part of it is the, what was that period in time? The Reformation or the, what was that called? You would know, Cassidy.
Well,
what's that
which
period?
Which one? There's the Reformation is one of them, which is.
The one where everything became science and intellectual.
Oh, well, that's
and
the Renaissance.
The Renaissance.
The Renaissance, where we got cerebral and things were like Descartesian
right.
and
that,
separated.
But that was a response to the sort of crushing weight of the church
yeah.
being in control of every aspect of life, so that's also not integrated. That's sitting over it like a crushing rock.
So then what period?
I don't know.
It was somewhere along the line when the colonizing white people got a hold of something really true. I mean, the Catholic sort of, or the Christian, some of the different Christian narratives go like, there was holy divine feminine wisdom, period. And then some dudes found it and they were like, oh, that's why. You ever read The Da Vinci Code or see that movie?
Yeah.
Right? Totally. It ends with a rose and everybody's always like, a fucking rose. That's the end of the fucking fuck you. And people think it's bad storytelling. And I'm like, no, you don't understand. The rose is the physical embodiment of the divine feminine.
Yeah.
All there is the divine feminine at the center of it, anything. And so then, and wedded with the masculine, but the feminine really does create all this stuff. So the point being, originally there was that, and then some dudes were like, oh, there's magic that comes out from that. Oh, we can codify that and control the people when we codify it. And we can tell them that only we know how to speak for the rose. Only we know how to channel direct contact with the rose. And so that, right? I don't know when that happened in history, but that is what happened. So I am wondering, like, how is it that the folks in Africa didn't de-wed everything? Like, nobody was power hungry? They were actually...
No, they were power hungry.
So what happened?
There were plenty of power.
Bad shit.
There have been power hungry people every part, everywhere on this planet, right? I mean...
Yeah. So, but I guess what we're saying is then that the practitioners of the religions that didn't de-wed the things were not so power hungry that they needed to manipulate the people by separating it all into stuff that you can't access without us. Is that fair? I mean, I suppose you could say that's true of any mystical tradition, any group of mystics. They're sitting around practicing their thing and going like, guys, everybody can have this. That's what the Sufis are about.
I think that's it. You touched on, right. So there's mysticism all over the world, and all of the big religions have their mystical side, mysticism arm of the religion.
Yep. Yep.
And I happen to be talking about religions that are mystical. So they are going to be.
There you go.
Yeah.
Rather than having a mystical arm, like they in themselves are already, is there a version of Vodou, for example, that is more like Christian church or the sort of we are in control and it's over here? Or is it just by its very nature more?
It seems like not.
That's really interesting. So when
are wielders of said religions, wielders as in, there are definitely, there's assholes even in those religions.
Sure, absolutely. There's assholes everywhere. In Haiti, you also have tons of Christianity, and some of it is, and in Benin too, like you have some that is married with Vodou and then some that is like pushing the Vodou away as far as possible. And those, there's a lot of controlling in that way too, but that's not within Vodou necessarily. That's Christianity.
Interesting. Just thinking about like how, okay, so one of the things we would come up against a lot in the Sufi school is our Sufi master, who was this like perfected master from Jerusalem, would often say all the time, he would say, the people who know what I'm teaching you the least are the Muslims.
Right.
In other words, he's like, the practitioners of this religion do not know their own mystical truth that is directly available to them. They just follow the words and the dogma of the religion without knowing anything about the truth of what's available in terms of direct Gnostic awareness and communion with the oneness.
Yeah.
And so I'm looking at, like, when I think about the three big ones, like Judaism and Catholicism and Islam, I'm seeing a separation between the mysticism and the religion in all of them quite actively.
Yeah.
Whereas when you describe these practices, inherent in describing them is the mysticism.
Yeah.
And how the sort of knee-jerk white people reaction, the culture of whiteness's response to, how do we say it? Vodou?
Yeah. I say Vodou. There's, you know, a bunch of different ways to say it, but you're good with Vodou.
But the white cultural response to the, I would argue, the entire African diasporic set of religions is one of fear, so much so that we projected a whole pin-poking crazy shit onto the whole thing.
Right.
Right. But I'm noticing in this conversation how we can't ignore the fact that religions that have woven into their very definition the mysticism at the heart of them are the ones that scare the white people. Because the white people are the ones that separated the mysticism from the dogma in all three of their major religions. Even though I don't know if you can call the Muslim world white per se. I don't even know. Who knows? Like, what does white mean anyway? But you know what I'm saying? That the three biggies that the most of the world is contending with have it separated. Whereas I don't know how you could practice voodoo and it be separated from mysticism. You couldn't, right?
I don't think so. I don't think you can. Yeah. Because I think everyone, because part of mysticism is having that personal connection to source, to spirit.
Right.
Right.
Yep.
And I don't know how you would practice voodoo if you weren't actively engaging in a relationship with spirit.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah. And of course, like, it is also interesting how I love mysticism, regardless of which religion it's inside of, has more in common with each other.
Yes.
Right. Than necessarily with, like you were saying, Sufi and Islam, you know, or whatever the, there's a common understanding because once you're talking about your personal connection to spirit.
Yeah.
Boom.
Right.
There it is.
Right. It doesn't matter which hat it's wearing.
You're open.
Well, here's a, I just turned my camera off because the Wi-Fi was getting shitty, but here's an idea that I learned in Sufi school. And we do have just a few minutes left. So I want to be sure, Rami, to leave time for anything that you were looking to hit on that we haven't hit on yet on this topic. So I just want to put that pin in your brain. In the meantime, just to say this.
Katie, we talked about the pin thing.
I heard it. Is that in the Sufi school, they gave me this framework that I thought was really nice. And I think it's interesting, at least in this conversation, to mention it. So they taught us that the idea was that you are the tree of life. The sap of the tree is the mysticism. The sap keeps the tree alive. It's like the sap, the wet, thick, sticky life force of the tree. The bark is what keeps the tree and the sap from just getting destroyed by the outside world. Metaphorically, what they're saying is religion is the bark, mysticism is the sap, you are the tree. And so that originally the purpose of religion was to create some external structures, rules, practices, prayers, don't eat this on this day, don't do this on that day, to protect the light of the sap running through the heart of you. It wasn't meant to oppress people. It was meant to liberate people into the light, give you a doorway into divinity. And it does.
And it does. I mean, having practices does that.
It does do that.
As long as, you know, that's how you're using them.
And so even when people are super triggered by religion, which I really understand, it's not even actually the religion that they're triggered by. They're triggered by how the religion was used by the people in control of it. Because even what we call dogma, it was originally built to not be carried dogmatically. It was built to be like, hey, you know, if you do these five things, the light in you is going to be super bright. So have a good day. And then it became, you have to do these five things because we say so, because then we have control over you. But see, that's the human beings twisting a thing that was really just a beautiful thing made of light meant to guide and protect us.
Yeah.
Now, this brings us back to a core existential question, which would be the question of why make a human being that needs rules to protect its light? Like, why not build the human being in such a way that they're just light? Wouldn't that be nice? Yeah. Or like that they don't have to like follow guidelines to like know the light within. Like, why are we made that way?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I have awarenesses of my own and thoughts about it and teachings I've learned about it. But that question, if you deeply sit with that question, a lot can come of that meditation. If your first response to it is not going to be defensive, AKA if you don't have a lot of spiritual trauma. Like if people didn't fuck you up real bad with Catholicism when you were a kid or Judaism or whatever it might be, then you might be open to sitting with like, why would a human being be made that way?
Wow.
So there's a lot there. Cassidy, how are you feeling?
I'm good. I'm just thinking. I'm just thinking if I have a response to that, and I don't. So it's fine.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think if it's useful for me to say what I'll just say this much about it, just for funsies. There's so much to say about it, but like, it's almost like you're given the gift of free will to see if you'll choose the light anyway.
Mm.
Because you get to choose. It's so interesting. Anyway, so, but then like, what does choose the light mean? I'll put it like this. It's like, I've been back into this like ritual of doing more prayers every day. Like I'm doing more Islamic, Muslim, on the rug, up, down, five times a day deal, because I'm finding myself craving what they call the ship of safety. There's a way that like, when you're in the practices more regularly, you start to feel like really like buffered from the world by a lot of light. And for me, it makes it easier to channel for people and hear guidance and stuff and do healing work. And it also just makes the world less difficult. It's just a much more beautiful place to spend five times of my day than not spending it there. So I'm finding myself going there a lot and going like, oh, right, the ship of safety is pretty fucking great, isn't it? And going like, oh, I'm choosing to do this. I used to do it out of a desperate need to not be in pain. That's how I got into all this shit. And then that passed and there wasn't the pain anymore. So then I just wasn't doing the ship of safety practices. It was like, I don't need to because I can do my healing work anyway. Now I'm going, well, but it's nicer. It's like the difference between, do you want like a really nice car that feels good when you sit in it? Or do you want like a janky old thing that hurts your ass every time you sit down? And some people like a janky old thing that hurts their ass. That's fine. And some people want to ride on silk. And some people want a German car. You know, my point being, it can just be gentler, kinder, more beautiful, just because it can be. That's just a choice we have. And the last thing I'll say about this, I thought this was interesting. This came today when I was in the prayers. I was asking God, like, so is God inside of consciousness or is consciousness inside of God? And I always get that God is in consciousness. And Rami's like throwing their head back, trying to take that one in. Meaning
God is in consciousness?
Like,
is God an embodiment, sort of a like almost like a vessel embodiment of the broader consciousness? Is light is the all that is, but God is a word that we've helped to kind of narrow the laser beam a little down. Is that what you're saying? It's like a subset?
Something like that. Like in other words, does God emanate from the field of consciousness or does consciousness emanate from the field of God? And I get a yes on both and a no on both. So it's like, I think they co-emanate. They co-integrate and co-mingle. But there's one thing I'm clear about is I personally like the realm of God. That's something I keep coming back to. It's like, not that the realm of God is right or good even. I just like it there because it has the qualities in it of peace, mercy, justice, freedom, love, authenticity, truth. Those are qualities I find in the realm of God. When I'm in the realm of consciousness, everything is there. Everything is there. So you can like murder people and buy babies and throw them off a building and love God and eat a pork sandwich and sit on a chair. And it's all in consciousness. But
gotcha. Okay. That I think is a good explanation.
Okay. But God is these particular frequencies of truth, mercy, justice, freedom, and love. I just like those qualities, but that's not everybody's bag. I just like it. You know what I mean? It's kind of liberating to see it that way because it makes me go, there's none of this supremacy shit. You don't have to be like, God is the supreme thing. It's like, what if even God is like an emanation, is like an aspect of the vast realm of consciousness?
God's just an option.
It's just an option.
There's something really, I don't know, I like that idea. I like that idea a lot.
Me too.
It makes sense to me, but I don't know if I have the words for why.
What I like about it is it allows me freedom to come to flow in and out of the realm of God. It's like maybe today's a kind of gaudy day. Maybe not. And God doesn't mind. God's just like, I always find God's attitude to be, yeah, I've been sitting here the whole time. I'm always available. It's fine. You need to go do those things. Do those things. You're going to be the one suffering while you do those things. So then come on back when you're ready. It's fine. And by suffering, I just mean like if I like choose espresso four times a day instead of prayer practice four times a day, I feel shittier at the end of that day. God doesn't feel shittier. And is God mad at me? No, God's just separated. I'm experiencing less of its qualities because I'm amped up on the cocaine of...
Yummy.
Exactly.
I know. I love coffee.
Fun times. Yeah, you know, I feel like you use the word God more freely than you did when you first started the podcast. Do you feel that way?
Oh, thank you. I like that. I think, I'm sure it's true. You listen more than I do. I don't know what I say.
I do listen to all of them.
I think it's just as I've went through the portal and the crucible of Mancos, Colorado, and had my spiritual ass kicked there and really got some things worked out in my nervous system there. It's just so clear to me how powerful God is, how present God is, how real God is. And I think I'm so intimately connected with it now that, like, I'm not so worried about people judging me for it because I'm not in so much judgment of it anymore. Yeah.
Word.
And if people have a misunderstanding of it, or if they think God means this oppressive thing that people did to the twisting of religion, then that's okay. We can have a conversation about that. And I can go, well, actually, what you're mad at, is not God. Yeah. God is just a field of light where truth, mercy, justice, freedom, and love are. Don't you want more of that? No? Okay, well, that's fine too. I'll be over here doing that.
Probably don't want to hang out with you if you really don't want any of that, but that's cool.
Probably not. And you know what's funny? I can have friends like on the periphery who are like that, but like closer into this, the fold, it's I just notice they're all peeps who are into those qualities and they wouldn't all necessarily attribute it to God. Like I said last week or 2 weeks ago on the podcast, like some of the most spiritual people I know are atheists.
Cassidy and I were having this conversation recently, weren't we?
Yeah, we were talking about as the same person that Katie first said it about.
All right, good place to end. Yay. You guys rock. Thank you for coming on, Robbie.
I love
Thank
you guys
you.
So much.
Thank you for this conversation.
Love you guys. We're all going to do our work.
Hey, everybody, do your work.
Do your work.
Do your work.
Hello, friends of the podcast. How are you doing? How's it going for you? I hope all is well and shiny and bright, and deeply surrendered and aligned and in flow. Just a small request and desire I have for your soul. Hey, listen, if you're interested in getting some really deep activation, spiritual healing and alignment for yourself, getting clarity on your own spiritual path, and or clearing or healing anything you need cleared or healed from your body, being, soul, or spirit, join me for 3 days of star being and Christ-light healing, October 1, 2, and 3 in upstate Massachusetts, or you can join online. It's a three-day retreat where we're gonna zap a ton of crap right on out of your system and align you with the light in a really powerful way. October 1, 2, and 3. For details, give me a little email and I will email you back with everything you need. KLRubin, R-U-B-I-N, at gmail.com. That's K as in kiss, L as in love, R-U-B-I-N, at gmail.com. Additionally, consider joining us for 2 weeks in Egypt, November 15th to the 26th. 2 weeks in Egypt, friends. We're going to go to the temples, we're going to go to the pyramids, we're going to go to the Sphinx, and we're going to be raising the vibrational field of the planet to lift the weight of the recent trauma that we've all been going through for the past year or two, from the planet itself, from the collective, and from our own hearts. So this will be a ton of healing, and also like rad travels on the Nile, and an integration time for 2 days at a beach at the end in Egypt. Have you always wanted to go to Egypt? Well, you should go. Now's the time. Email me, klrubin at gmail.com. That's K as in kiss, L as in love, R-U-B-I-N at gmail.com.
What are you asking for? All of the answers? Say what? All of the answers? Yeah, all the answers.
Hey guys, thanks for listening. We'd love to hear from you. Please email us with your questions so that we have questions to answer in the Akashic Records. Our email address is allanswerspod@gmail.com. That's allanswerspod@gmail.com. And if you'd like to find us on Facebook or Twitter, it's @allanswerspod. Thank you.
You know what I have to do? I have to take my pants off. Hold on.
I love it. Do it. This is going to be a super cool conversation.
All right, so we're recording?
Yes.
As I remove my pants, we're recording. Oh, that's so much better.
All right.
I forgot my dog walker is coming.
Perfect.
I have to put the pants on.
I'm just going
to
keep recording.
Yeah, listeners. Yeah. Watch this.
This is what's happening. Put those pants on, Katie. I'm telling you, skirts.
Mixed and edited by Desmond McNeese for We Mixed It, LLC. Go to whatsoundsawesome.com.